Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Benz Nation Radio Show. It is January 3rd, and the last time we talked, we didn't really have anything good to say. Today, we have a little bit more optimism than maybe we might have. At least we hope so. We'll also be talking the latest news about the lockout, the latest news about the World Junior Championship, and to help me do all this, to help me break all this stuff down, we have the usual. Suspects. We have Nick, we have Ken, we have Ashley, and then we also have a special guest on tonight, a good friend of the show, Mr. Jesse Marshall of the Face Off Factory, to come help us come on and break everything down. How are you guys doing tonight?
Fantastic.
Doing great. Got a new sponsor for the show.
Yeah, we'd also like to let you guys know that to do our part in the fight against celiac disease. Tonight's show will be brought to you by the letter T for gluten.
You guys.
I thought you were going to say brought to you by America.
America.
Well, I think all of hockey right now is brought to you by America, because right now America is the only country that wins at hockey. So
it's America's game.
North America's game.
It's America's game.
I'm drinking an iced tea and I'm wearing a tank top.
There's nothing more American than that.
I disagree. I'm drinking ginger ale and wearing a Snuggie. That's American.
That's a terrorist right there.
I even censored myself.
Yeah, I think all of our listeners already know what you are capable of doing on the airways. You get a few ginger ales in your belly, buddy.
Oh my gosh.
All right, so anyway, moving on to the stuff that people actually want to hear us talk about. The National Hockey League, National Hockey League Players Association, met separately with a federal mediator throughout the day today, decided to expect to continue the mediation process Friday, beginning at about 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, according to a league spokesman.
Thank God.
Yeah, right, you know, if you haven't been paying attention, basically, there's a deadline. It's coming up soon. It's coming up on the 11th. They're going to have to get something done by then in order to get a 48-game season done that would start on January 19th. We'll go around to everybody and kind of get your thoughts on it right now. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being we will definitely have hockey on January 19th, and 1 being there's no way in hell we're having the NHL hockey season this year. Where are you with this?
So, 8. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Oh, great. Man, I wish I could be a little more positive. I do think there is going to be an NHL season, but I can't help but just kind of be discouraged with the past couple of days. I'm kind of encouraged and discouraged at the same time, because I'm encouraged because we're so close. I'm discouraged because there's still so much bickering and infighting going on, and just Kool-Aid being drank on a player side. And just it's frustrating right now. I'd say probably about a 7 if I had to choose right now.
Okay, Ken, where are you at with this?
I think I'm right around L or P.
L or P, okay. Well, we've already gone up to G, so.
I have no idea. I have no idea, you know, because from minute to minute, the story is changing. We have agents who are saying it's going to be done tomorrow. Media members who are way more obsessed with the way people look in pictures or what podium is being used for press conferences to have any kind of real news being reported. And truthfully, it's not their fault, because there is no real news and there is no update, because nobody knows what's going on. And that includes Don Fehr and Gary Bettman. I mean, it's basically to come out to what mood is everybody in on January 10th.
Yeah. Jesse, what are your thoughts on it up to this point?
I'm at solid 8.6 right now. They're playing. They're too close. This is the closest we've ever been. I mean, revenue is no longer an issue. I mean, we're talking about pensions, which I don't understand because I thought we had that taken care of 2 weeks ago. And now they legally changed their mind. And then the cap, we're $5 million off the cap. They'll meet halfway on that. And I think the only real issue is length, which I'm concerned about. That ain't the only deal breaker in the whole thing right now, actually.
But it seems like at least the numbers that have been talked about, the contract length, are quite different than what they were in December.
Right. That's the hill that they're going to die on, though, right?
Right, exactly. But it seems like the NHL has moved quite a bit on that.
That's what I was being facetious, so I said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they've moved. I don't think that the shorter contract length is an issue. It's going to certainly make trade deadline and free agency exciting again.
Talking about pensions, not talking about the game. Talking about pensions. Ashley, where are you with it?
I'm at a solid 5 right now. I refuse to be optimistic, and I refuse to be pessimistic because, like Ken said, it changes
typical
every day.
Typical neutral Canadian.
I know. I'm sitting on the fence. Sorry.
Jeez.
At this point, I think 5 is being cynical, to be honest. Just to kind of give where I'm at with it.
It changes every day. You think you're close, and then you're that close, and then, oh, no, sorry, we're, you know, still yards apart. And then, oh, maybe we're a little bit closer. Oh, no, maybe we're not. I'm almost at the point where it's just like, you know what, cancel it. Don't care.
Yeah, I'm almost at a 7 because Teemu Selanne. So.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Nick totally stole my thunder. I'm at a solid 10. Okay, you know, I'll even have my spinal tap moment with this, and I'll just stick to 11 because.
That's what Joe goes to 11.
If it goes to 10, if Teemu says we're going to have hockey settled on Monday, I believe Teemu Selanne. I mean,
this
is that really a bad
calls a shot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, think really? About all the sources that we've had that have become total BS a few months. I trust in Teemu. I think you guys should too.
Yeah, Joe, when's Teemu ever been indecisive about something? I'm just kidding. You know, retirement.
There's a joke in there.
Oh, yeah, okay. I would have, if you would have said, this would have worked out better if it would have, like, been Niedermeyer or something like that.
It's kind of like Shane Doan showing up late for the negotiations last night.
Oh, yeah.
It's like showing up once the players had already left. Oh, sorry.
I didn't know which cab to take.
I'm gauging how good negotiations go by Ron Hainsey's hair. Ron Hainsey's hair is solid. If it's like a solid 8 or 9, you know it's going to be a good night. They're going to negotiate until 2 a.m. People are just going to be looking at his hair.
I'm judging it by Dreger's smile.
Well, if that's the case, then we're screwed.
Yeah.
There's no smile in that man.
Solani joke, I am pretty much a 9 or a 10 with his. I think at this point, the revenue was, like Jess is talking about, the revenue was the big albatross, and I think that has kind of been conquered, for lack of a better word. And, you know, you talk about the salary cap situation. That's not a big deal. You know, length of a player contract. I think ultimately, over the next few days, that's something that can easily be worked out because I just think it's a situation to where the NHL has kind of set a certain precedent with contracts. Certain long-terms in the league that have been fine. There's certain ones that haven't been. To me, the thing that made me believe that we're going to have hockey and they're going to be able to settle all issues, I truly do not believe that owners around the league and players around the league would both get together and sign off on a situation to where each team would be able to buy out 2 players under their current contracts without counting against the salary cap, with it just counting against the hockey-related revenue, which is the HRR thing that everybody keeps talking about. If you're not following along with this, and I don't blame you if you're not.
No, you're a better person.
Yeah, I don't – if there's anyone out there who's, like, following this and they're like, I don't know what the heck these guys are talking about, I don't blame anyone. If people are just, like, totally ignoring this process, I don't blame them one bit.
That's totally Chris Letang right now.
Yeah, bizarre.
Wait, what's going on? I'm out of here.
The timing is just absurd when it comes
awful.
To
I don't think the whole story is being reported there. The way I see it is that Chris Letang has made a decision that he will play in the KHL, and he's probably had an agreement with a team in the KHL that if a deal is not reached here by January 11th, he's going to go overseas and play in the KHL. I don't think he's leaving tomorrow morning. I think that's just a stupid report at this point because there's no details.
Way to be rash.
Well, I mean, part of the way I look, January, it's not April, so Letang's decision-making is probably still sound.
Ouch.
Oh, wow. Yikes. That hurt me.
Jeez, Depto. Boo, Depto.
You going to rag on Fleury next?
No, quite the opposite. Putting that as I'm a Chris Letang fan. I just you threw me one right down the middle there. I had to knock it out of the park.
So in case anybody's wondering, again, what we're talking about, Chris Letang has been reported to be playing in Russia during the lockout. And he's going to be headed to Russia to play in the KHL, but there's no report as to what team he's going to play for or anything like that, which is why I think that there's a little bit more to this story right now than what we're being fed. But that's the latest news, which, like you guys mentioned, that's pretty odd timing, unless Letang knows something that everybody else in the hockey world, including Bettman and Fear, don't know.
SKA Sky St. Petersburg or the KHL is what's being reported right now.
But that's stupid.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. Imagine him on that big ice. Woo! Good night.
Yeah.
Good night.
It's a lot of room for his legs. Shut up. No, I was pulling for him to go and be skating over there in Metallurg. You know, if we don't have a season, I'd love to see Letang, Crosby, all go over and play on the same team with Gotch and Malkin. That'd be kind of fun.
I don't know, man. I'm a little bit concerned about the KHL. Sometimes like a Wild West. I'd rather see Crosby go to like calmer. Switzerland, maybe, you know.
Just send him to the beach.
Yeah, wasn't he rumored that if the lock is going to end, I could be totally wrong about this, but some reports that Switzerland is where he was considering going.
That's where I got
that.
Yeah.
Which, I guess
Switzerland, man. We talk about Swiss hockey.
Can we just get this out of the way? This isn't really related to anything, but I think I'm a little bit disturbed by the amount of people I saw today that were like, yes, Ottawa's going to buy out Devonchar, and we're going to bring him back. I vomited when I saw that. I threw up in my mouth. Anybody that
stole my thunder on that.
Awful. Absolutely awful.
Does anybody remember Gonchar's last time here as a Penguin?
Olay games. Yeah, it was a Matador.
Pretty much.
Jeez.
I mean, I love Sergei Gonchar. I love what he did in Pittsburgh in his time, but you know, that was his time. It's not now.
Yeah, it's well
not
past.
The same guy.
Well, I just don't think, if you take a look at the Penguins' defense, I think it's a lot of people are forgetting that Mahalik is not here anymore. And I understand that Dedmik Mahalik, he wasn't, you know, this wasn't Nick Lidstrom in his prime or anything like that. But when you take a look at the Penguins' current setup, you have Chris Letang, who's obviously a star. Orpik, there were some signs of age. He's still an effective defensive presence, but there were some signs of age yesterday. Paul Martin speaks for itself. Matt Niskanen, you're not sure if he's able to be able to go and sustain that for another season, the type of play that he had last year. Basically, the point I'm trying to make is, at what point are you going to start bringing in defensemen who are going to be defensive zone anchors, who are going to be, not to get too nostalgic here for 2009, but Rob Scuderi types, that sort of thing, you know, to break it up, still strong skating for Bosma's system, but is a physical presence in the own zone. That was just an absolute abysmal performance in that department by the Penguins defensive unit. I would have to give preference to a guy like Brian Strait, a Robert Bortuzzo, like that, before I would bring in a Sergei Gonchar situation. And, I mean, I understand the locker room effect it could have, but if the defense is going out there struggling like they did last season, especially in the second half, especially in March heading into the postseason, I don't think the locker room is going to have a positive effect regardless.
Yeah, and they already have enough guys, especially coming up through the system, that could fire the puck on net. And I don't think you need that kind of clone thing. What you're needing is absolutely what you just said, that Rob Scuderi type. Not someone that's going to bash guys around or not or anything like that, but just the guy who's positionally sound, who's going to make the play that needs to be made to get the puck out of the zone. Just a strong, steady presence back there.
You know who I wanted, Joe?
Scott Hannon, okay. I thought you were going to say Jackman there for a minute, but no, Scott Hannon, who is with the Nashville Predators right now, I think he would have been solid. I think really anyone kind of in that mold would have been fine. It just seems to me that the defense has been missing somebody like that for a considerable amount of time. And when the front office has attempted to bring in defensemen through free agency, through that trade, they've overpaid for players that don't really fit what the team is going for. And I'm talking about players like Jordan Leopold. I'm talking about Matt Niskanen's first season in Pittsburgh. He did well last year, but there were a lot of Dallas fans that were pretty happy to get rid of that guy, and he was looked at as a trade. Now that he's got his contract, is he able to sustain that for another season? I don't know. And even so, Matt Niskanen's biggest asset to the team in the offensive zone, it was on the second power play unit, it was on that sort of thing. And even he's not really a bruiser type.
No, and the other concern you have with a guy like Matt Niskanen is that he's not the consistency. He did have a good showing last year, but now he's been sitting cold for 8 months. How's he going to return after that?
It's a good point.
Well, that's league-wide. Matt Niskanen and Joe pretty much hit the nail on that. When that trade went down, I think Dallas fans overrated how good Alex Goligoski was. I think people in Pittsburgh overrated how good Alex Goligoski was, but the Dallas fans were rejoicing when it was an addition to move for them. So I think Niskanen, I'm not as concerned because, you know, I think that was an environmental issue. When you play so well at such a young age, like he did, and under the tutelage of Sergei Zubov, who that's not a bad guy to learn the game from, but when Zubov left, you know, there was this expectation was each on Niskanen that maybe wasn't the most fair assessment of where he was. So I think that he's a guy that's still learning, you know, even, you know, he's a little bit older, but I think he's still putting it together a little bit. So I think out of all the defensemen that, you know, you're probably going to see on the blue line, he's one of the ones that I'm probably least concerned about right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he fits into that system incredibly well, actually. He could skate. He had a decent shot. I mean, he's not the toughest of guys, but he's almost like the Rob Scuderi type, plus a little offensive flair.
Can Derek Engler...
No,
is that a stretch?
No, I don't think so. I mean, honestly, it's not putting down Derek Englund. I think Derek Englund, if he's what baseball scouts refer to as a 4A player. I mean, he provides a skill set that is probably too useful for an NHL franchise to be an AHL guy, to be a Wilkes-Barre guy, but he lacks a lot of the basic fundamentals, at least in a game setting at the NHL level against teams in the Atlantic Division. I think too much to be an NHL guy. And, you know, referencing something, Jesse, you said on Twitter earlier today, you're not ready to see 15-plus minutes of Ben Lovejoy.
I'm not ready to see any minutes.
If the Penguins are rolling with either Derek Englund or Ben Lovejoy, worst-case scenario, and Ben Lovejoy on a regular basis, they are not going to make it past the first round of the playoffs. You cannot win playoff hockey with Derek Englund or Ben Lovejoy playing on a nightly basis, because against Philadelphia, against New York, against Washington, against Boston in a playoff series, those guys aren't going to be good enough to stop the type of offensive rush and the type of forecheck that those teams are going to provide.
Joe, I'll take it a step further. If we get this done and we start on the 19th, look at that schedule. You got to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I mean, we have the two best players in the world here, and we got two goaltenders that are, everybody forget about Thomas Vokoun, but with the amount of games you're going to have packed into this schedule, you're going to be playing four times a week.
Yep.
Four, you know, you need him, so that's even more important. But I'm not saying that, you know, we're at risk to not make to the top eight, but you just have gauntlet. It's a gauntlet. You're going to get Philadelphia. You're going to get New York. I mean, it's going to be
– don't forget New Jersey even in their Stanley Cup championship team.
And I think people are severely – I'm not saying the Islanders are going to go out here and light the world on fire, but you look at some of the youth they've got coming up. You know, Ryan Strome, Joe, I mean, he's probably going to play this year. So, you know, they've got guys that are going to score goals. It's not going to be a cakewalk going into the Islands anymore. It's just not. It's not going to be a cakewalk. So you got to get into the playoffs. I mean, that's the biggest thing now. So your point is even more valid considering what we're going to have to go through from the 19th on to the playoffs just through the regular season.
Yeah, and what you just brought up there, absolutely valid, and kind of reminds me of kind of why I'm worried a little bit about that. You do have to make the playoffs. This division is incredibly hard, but we do have the two best players in the world, although one of them may have some tired legs by the end of that season, already playing a ton of games over in the KHL already. So you kind of really have to manage, I think. I think Bosman's going to have to really do a great job managing Evgeny Malkin's time, his practices, and the nights that he's out there, actually. And it's going to make it that much harder, I think, for the Penguins to make the playoffs. Will they? More than likely. I mean, they've got the skill. They're pretty deep to be able to make that kind of run, but there's going to be some pretty tired legs on their team, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those who aren't familiar with the report or the details of the way the schedule is going to be, it's not going to be your standard, we play the division team six times and then other teams in the conference four times. It's not going to be like that. In a 48-game schedule, first off, there's going to be no interconference games. Secondly, you're talking about seven games against each divisional opponent. So there's 28 of your 48 games that's going to be played against your divisional opponent. In a very short window, in a short calendar, you're going to be playing three, four, possibly even five nights a week. They're all going to be difficult games. And when you're the Pittsburgh Penguins and you play against five teams, Jesse touched on it with the Islanders, but I'll straight up say this. The worst-case scenario that the Islanders are going to finish this year is going to be 10th place. They're going to be a borderline playoff team. Would not shock me at all if they get the 7th or 8th seed. They're playing playoff-caliber teams each and every night. New York, possibly the best team and the deepest team in the NHL. There is not a weak spot on that roster.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, defensively, Luke Shen has been added. There have been, you know, Giroux is in a contract year. He's scheduled for breakout. Brizgalov is likely going to have a bounce year. New Jersey, fantastic. I mean, there's so many things that they could benefit from, especially even their aging goaltenders. Brodeur and Hedberg aren't forced to play an 82-game season. They can go back and forth in a 48-game schedule and breathe some life back into them. New Jersey is going to be contending in the Atlantic just as much, and we already discussed the Islanders a little bit. And even when you branch out into the other division games, when you play the Washingtons, the Bostons, the Ottawa, Carolina, teams like that, you're going to be playing a home-and-home series to where that's going to be your only chance to make up any ground outside of the division. So if you're in a five spot and Carolina's in the four, you're going to only have one game. Basically what I'm trying to say, playing playoff hockey each and every night, just not really sure that Penguins defense is ready to go.
And a lot of those guys have gotten a lot better or during the offseason as well. I mean, the whole conference is really a lot more deep. I mean, just look at the Southeast Division. It's not the lapper that it used to be. When you got teams like Florida, Florida's been the last couple of years, a Washington and a Carolina is so much stronger than they were in acquiring Jordan Staal. And I mean, it's just Winnipeg, if they get off to the same kind of start that they did last season, you know, that's half the year when you're on a 28 game BR. 56 points, not 28, but you know what I mean. 56 points is what we're talking about with division opponents alone, which is 9 points more than what the Columbus Blue Jackets had all last season.
Right, right. And then not only that, but it's all the teams that have gotten stronger. I can't really think of many teams other than arguably Toronto. I can't think of any teams in the East that you can make an argument that are just not very good at all. There's not a bad team other than them. Even look at a team like Montreal, who were not very strong at all last season. They got much tougher to play against, and they still have a fantastic goalie in Carey Price. Even a team like Tampa Bay, who was defensively weak and had some serious goaltending issues, they've added Anders Lindback from Nashville. They've added Matt Carl from Philadelphia. Say what you will about his contract, but he does have a nice playoff resume, and he can play very well in his own end in a shortened window like that. Florida's in division. Washington's fantastic. I mean, there's not a bad team in the East but Toronto.
The other wild card in all of this, too, is you got to learn a lot about your team really fast, because when that trade deadline rolls around, how many teams are going to know enough about their squad to want to make a move or to know exactly what they want to do? So that option might not be as much in play for Ray Shiro come February.
A lot of there's going to be some guys coming in, young guys coming into the Eastern Conference that are going to shock everybody. Jonathan Huberdeau is one of them. Florida. I'm not an advocate of what Florida did. I think they threw a bunch of stuff at a wall and it just happened to work out. That's my opinion. But Huberdeau coming, Strome's going to be in there. It's not going to be a you're not going to go into Buffalo and take points easily. You're not. It's going to be a brutal. It's going to be so much fun for us, but it's going to be an absolute bloodbath. I think the thing that I'm looking forward to the most out of all of this is if this deal gets done, January 19th is going to be a great day. I mean, you're going to have every single rivalry that exists in this sport played on the same night. And how often does that happen?
Absolutely. And one positive thing, and again, I do want to remind the listeners that 11:30, we're going to be losing our live portion of the show. We're going to keep going for more time. We're going to be doing a podcast portion. Stay tuned to Twitter. Stay tuned to thepensnation.com. Follow us on Facebook, all that sort of thing. We'll have links up. You can download it. Subscribe for free on iTunes, all that sort of thing, so that you can hear that portion of the show. But the live portion of the show is going to end then. One thing I would like to add in terms of the positive note with the Pittsburgh Penguins is that you do have, obviously, the Carlson, Malkin, Neil, Kunitz, Letang. We all know those names. But in a shortened period like this, a shortened season, goalies that are able to get on hot streaks are going to be more beneficial ever, especially if there's series that are against the same teams. There's not a better goalie pairing in the NHL than Marc-Andre Fleury and Tomas Vokoun. So even if the defense is struggling, as long as the forwards are back-checking, which they did get better at that with Brandon Sutter, they did get better at that with Tanner Glass, by bringing in those players and not relying on players like Richard Park as much and Matt Cook struggling on the back-check last year, they did get a little bit better in that zone. So if they're able to do that, I think having two strong goalies like that, if they can get hot at the right time, I do think that can kind of compensate for some of the deficiencies on the back end.
Brandon Sutter, I'm pumped about it. I think that being in Carolina and being in the situation that he was in, he had to be a president. I mean, it was required. And you watch the way that Carolina plays hockey. They're paying attention to their own end first. It's not a necessity. They have an amazing goaltender. When he's good, he's great. I think Sutter's going to have an opportunity here that he's not had yet. I think some people have said, well, look at what he's done offensively in his career. Sure, goal-wise, maybe a little underwhelming, but if there's ever an environment that a guy like that is gonna thrive in and put up career numbers. He found it. You can't replace Jordan Staal. I'm sorry. You can't do it, but if you did the best job you possibly could have. I don't think there's anybody else out there that I would have wanted out of that deal. Get another young guy, great defensive presence, excellent penalty killer, and we're going to find out how much he can contribute to this team offensively pretty quickly here. And I that's one of the things that I'm most excited about to see with this team is his presence on that third line.
I'm going to make a very unpopular argument when it comes to Sutter and what he's able to do with this team. I think in a more playoff-style season, I don't know about the long term, and I'm not saying Jordan Staal is a star player, but I think this season the Penguins at center will be much more superior than they have been over the last few seasons. I would say the Penguin centers, as a total unit, not just Crosby or Malkin or Sutter or Craig Adams or Vitali or whoever the fourth-line center is individually. I'm not saying that. I'm saying as a unit. And my reason for that is because for the first time since 2009, every center on this team, A, knows their role, and B, will be buying into it. Jordan Staal has always wanted to be more than a third-line center, and he's always had the skill set to be more than a third-line center. Moving him to wing or playing him on left wing with Crosby and all these sort of things, Sutter is the definitive third-line checking line center.
And they're healthy.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, we hope Malkin is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just spent a lot of time in that Flyer series just breaking tape down on the site, and the overarching theme – and that tape was penalty kill was terrible. That Flyer series, kill was terrible. And there's, we went back and we reread all that stuff that we put up, you know, just trying to get amped up for the season. You know, somebody mentioned to me, because the common denominator in all this is Jordan Staal is on the ice every single time that happens. That breakdown, you think about the overtime game one. Nick, we were both sitting right next to each other for that one. The presence wasn't there. Now, I don't know if he had mentally checked out. You know, there was all those contract rumors at that time. You know, the extension that got supposedly declined. That, you know, he signed the same deal in Carolina. And I'm not going to say Jordan Staal checked out, but I think Joe hit the nail on the head. This is a situation where Brendan Sutter is not going to come out in the media and say, you know, I want to move up. He's going to play where he's at. And not only is he going to do what he's done ever since he came into the league, he's got an opportunity to go out there and spend 60% of his time on the ice in the offensive zone. You haven't seen that yet. You haven't seen that yet from him. So goal-wise, we saw James Neal, what he did when he got that opportunity, 40 goals. I'm not saying Brendan Sutter's going to score 40 goals, but career best, it looks like I would say a formality. I'd say his career best, if he could score at a 25 goal pace, we're going to be just fine.
I think it'd be sweet if Brendan Sutter scored 40 goals in a shortened season.
It'd be sweet if anybody scored 40 goals this year.
I think the big concern in terms of what the Penguins have forward, because I do think Tanner Glass and Sutter are both going to provide a lot more stability and consistency to the bottom six and to the penalty kill. The main concern I think you have with Pittsburgh does a Kunitz Crosby Dupuis line produce the level that you want to, and B, second line left wing, if you're Dan Bartles and you keep that Kunitz Malkin Neal line together, you've got a big open spot where Sidney Crosby is going to need a guy. Kunitz and Dupuis have kind of fit that role by default, given the style of play. Crosby does play better with the grinding type guys. That's fine. But if you don't, that spot that is being vacated by, well, Steve Sullivan most of the year, but there were some other players that kind of fit that role on that second line, along with Evgeny Malkin and James Neal, I do think it is very beneficial to have a left wing on that second line that can create some sort of space. Can that be Eric Tangrady? In theory, you would think so, with his back up against the wall, playing for what might be his last chance to prove himself in the NHL, at least in the Penguins. But I know for sure not going to be Tyler Kennedy. I didn't mean to say for sure and Tyler Kennedy. It's not going to be him. And I don't think the Penguins really have anybody else that can fill that spot until Bo Bennett's ready. And I don't think, from what we've seen in Wilkes-Barre this year with injuries and that sort of thing, I don't think Bo Bennett's a guy that you can really count on being NHL-ready right now either.
Bo Bennett, he told us, Nick, that he didn't think he'd be 100% till December. So that means that he's been out for a little while. He just got back in the lineup. Was that last night or maybe the night before? It hasn't been a week yet. So he was out. He's coming back now. He's a guy that said he wasn't going to be 100% till around Christmas. He missed some time. Let him marinate down there. He needs it. He'll be fine for next year. But I'm with you on that one, Joe. Just give him a minute and let him settle in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he needs a little more seasoning down the AHL. I mean, if you look at his power play numbers, they're great, which kind of skews the rest of his numbers. His 5-on-5 play hasn't been exactly something that he's been tearing up the league with. His 5-on-5, he's pretty average right now. So let him season up a bit. And hopefully whenever he does get his chance here in Pittsburgh, he's going to light the world on fire.
I'll say one thing about Bo Bennett in the Wilkes-Barre games that I've watched that gets me a little bit amped about him. When he played at Penticton, and it was obviously the BCHL, so this isn't like he's not playing for the Vancouver Giants here, but when he was in Penticton, and I think he lost this in college. I think that the people that, I don't want to say wrote him off, but there were some people that disregarded his time at Denver, which generally speaking was injury plagued, when he didn't get a big chance to step in there and do what he wanted to do. But I'll say this about Bo Bennett. When he was in Penticton, he intimidated other teams with his shot. He scored goals. I always say violent goals. His release, the quickness of it, and that one-timer from the circle. That's what sold me on him when they drafted him. And we watched Wilkes-Barre. Nick, you said it's not so much 5-on-5. You look at what he's doing on the power play, I'm extremely pleased developmentally with where he is right now. And I'm shocked, actually, I would say, even maybe a little bit. I don't want to say I wrote Bo Bennett off, but Denver was an underwhelming time for him. And he's got that swagger back, and you know, he's changed his flex on his stick because of his wrist and all this other stuff. But when he rips them down there, man, it's one of those things that you see that shot coming and the goaltenders, you know, they freeze because they don't know where that puck's going.
It was one of those things we saw at development camp where his shot is just lethal. And he was saying it's around 80% or whatever, and he said it wouldn't be ready until December at 100%. But that shot, even at 80%, like you said, it was violent. It was just so quick. The release is so fast that once he gets familiar with that system, once he gets familiar 5-on-5 and a little stronger, it's going to be awesome to see him play on a wing with Crosby or Malkin or whomever he's playing with in the NHL. The one thing that surprised me a lot with Bo Bennett this season a lot was his creativity. I didn't know how well of a passer he could be and how much he can create, but this kid is looking superb right now.
Yeah, it's a good thing for Penguins fans. The one thing people always said about Bo Bennett was he's a roller hockey guy.
Yeah.
And what we mean by that is you don't hit in roller hockey. You know, it's hands for days, creativity for days. You have all that space, and you have no fear of any physical repercussion. You can just kind of go out there and dangle around and do whatever you want. That was the biggest concern, is he's playing too much roller hockey. He's not playing enough ice. And I'm watching him in Wilkes-Barre, and I'm not seeing that. Kudos to Bill Guerin.
Bill Guerin.
Jay McKee fart videos.
Yeah, we still got everybody on here?
Yeah. You have to listen to the three farts at the end of the show.
Okay.
Yeah, I wondered what Dupuis and Guerin thought about McKee putting that up, going public with that video. That was a little...
You might be the best follow on Twitter right now.
Yeah, he's filling in for Peter tackling Eddie whenever he gets angry.
It's as if, I mean, I don't remember Jay McKee being like that. Like, his playing days, he was kind of the quieter, level-headed kind of guy. Interviews were kind of bland and boring, and now all of a sudden he's on social media, and it is complete, like, firestorm. Every night, something different with that guy.
So, what was everybody doing this morning at 4 o'clock?
Woo!
Man, I gotta say, I set my alarm. I set my alarm, and then I stayed up way too late, and I knew at, like, 12:30 that there was no chance of me getting up in time to watch the game, and I kind of resigned myself, like, you know what? I watched the first game, and I didn't see much hope. And even watching the Team USA throughout the series, I just didn't see them. There being any way for them to beat Canada. But, man, I mean, Canada definitely came. But Team USA brought it. And it's fun to watch, especially when you have so many local guys who are in that lineup and representing that, not just your country, but the Roosburg in East Palestine, Ohio, right across the border here.
Yeah, I didn't think the U.S. team would be able to score like they have in the past couple of games. It kind of really took me by surprise, actually. Defensively, pretty goaltending, pretty solid. And if they needed to go anywhere, it would have to be great, and it has been. But as far as goal production has gone, I did not expect that.
They actually started converting on the power play. In those first couple of games, it seemed like it wasn't even possible for that to happen.
He must have had Bo Bennett help him out.
Is Joe still here?
Yeah, I'm still with you. I was having my connections in and out. I'm hearing you now a little bit
Joe,
better than I was before.
How pumped are the Ducks right now?
What's that? I'm sorry.
How pumped are the Ducks? John Gibson. Just end the conversation just right there. Lights out. Absolutely lights out. I did not, after last year, coming into this one, I knew he played well in the CHL, but I didn't expect it.
Yeah, I mean, how was there a prospect probably in this entire tournament, including McKinnon, including Seth Jones, who raised the stock, probably, I mean, not draft stock, obviously, but raised his organization stock more than John Gibson did? I don't think so. I mean, this guy single-handedly shut down just absolute murder row of a Team Canada. The amount of talent that team has, and to be able to shut them down 5-1 was absolutely fantastic. The guys played on his head, and due to, you know, a lot of his strong play, the team has a good shot to beat Sweden and go on to potentially get a gold medal.
Yeah, he's really outshining the stars out there too. I mean, now Yakupov. I mean, what he has done nothing throughout the entire tournament. Seth Jones, even his own teammate, hasn't been that impressive throughout the tournament. But John Gibson, like Jesse said, you absolutely did not expect put up this much in the past year of his development.
Yeah, especially against guys that are NHL proven, like Ryan Nugent, too. I mean, shut
him down,
like, jeez.
Point blank at the slot.
I think one thing you're seeing this tournament, you know, if the NHL were playing right now, number one, obviously the landscape of the World Juniors would be monumentally different. But one thing you're seeing right now is the difference between guys like that, you know, you mentioned Nugent Hopkins, you know, the guy that the Americans have to watch out for on Saturday is Sebastian Kalberg.
Yeah.
Grigorenko. I'll throw Riley Barber's name in there, who's kind of come out, you know, Huberto. You look at Seth Jones and you look at McKinnon, they're getting outclassed right now. Now that's not an indictment of them by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I think especially with Seth Jones, having watched the United States so much, you know, points-wise, looks great. Decision-making, and for Grigor to throw that out there too,
This has been such a fun tournament to watch. And when you look at the top scorers right now on this league, other than Gaudreau from the United States, who's playing out of his mind right now, but those young guys are finding out that you know what